Hey everyone, and welcome back to Beat the Sheet, an Xbox Game Pass challenge. The only podcast aiming to complete every single one of the near 300 titles that have been made available on Game Pass since the start of 2020. As always, I'm Andy Wood, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
Hello again.
Alright, so on this week's show, we've got a bunch of new games that have been added to the service that we're going to talk about. We're going to be tearing into the hilarious physics platformer type games in Game Pass. We've got some news coming up on Halo and Battletoads. And finally, a Rogue Leaving Soon title sent us straight to the pits this week. So we will be talking about that too. So, yeah, how's your week been, Josh?
My week's been fine. I'm more worried about your week because I spent the past week charting something which has given me great amusement. Regular listeners may know about 2 weeks ago, Andy made the bizarre decision to pay full price for Rocket Arena, the terrible rocket launcher game I just assumed was free to play. And he told me he paid actual money for. Well, in hilarious news, so few people have bought this game that it's almost certainly going to become free to play in about a week's time.
Yeah, so
how are you coping with this, Andy? Did you join lobbing 20 odd quid to a year to slash it to a fiver two weeks later?
I mean, I've greatly enjoyed my 30 minutes I've spent on that game so far. But I've played it on like two different occasions on like separate days. And in both games, the people in the match were the same. So like, there's no one there. There's just a bunch of people who are like really high leveled already because for some reason they're playing a ton of Rocket Arena. But slightly disappointing. I'm sure they'll do something to make it right. They'll probably give us some sort of crappy battle pass things because we paid for the game that's definitely meant to be a free game. But yeah, that's nice. That's always a pleasant thing to do. Definitely happy.
I just thoroughly enjoyed the fact that when you told me you bought it, I just assumed this was a free to play game.
It should have been.
I thought there's no way people are paying actual money for Rocket Arena. You managed to prove me wrong on that one. And then EA managed to actually fulfill my hypothesis just 2 weeks later. It just brought a smile to my face. I don't know why your misfortune gave me so much joy, but
it's the cornerstone of this friendship, Josh. I was asking. But that was nice. The worst thing is as well, right? So I bought it and I played a few matches and it's a perfectly fine game. It's like, you know, it's fun enough. It's like a solid 6 or 7 out of 10 kind of game. But then it's got one of these bloody battle passes that everything has now, except for battle passes are meant to be in free games. Like, you know, like Fortnite funds itself by having a battle pass. People pay for it once every couple of months and then they unlock costumes. This has that as well. You have to pay for that, but then also the game is 20 quid. Like, it's appalling.
Well, the game was 20
quid. Was 20 quid for around about 10 days.
Yeah. I think EA is eventually going to start paying people to play Rocket Arena if it carries on at this rate. But it wasn't much else happening in your week. Anything exciting happened?
Oh, I mean, not too much. I went back into one of my old saves on, I've put a ton of hours into Football Manager on my phone. So it's like the latest one, like Football Manager 2020 or whatever. And basically the mobile edition gets too easy. It's just it's a problem where like after you've played, even if you start in like the conference or like national leagues, after about 10 seasons, you will just win the premiership every time. Like it's, I don't know what it is, but the difficulty just falls off on it. So I made a new save last year that I'd made a bit of progress in, where basically I called my manager Ned Flanders and I renamed one of the conference teams to just be a Leftorium Football Club. And they only are allowed to play with left foot players. So I try and beat Football Manager with a team only consisting of left-footed players. We're now in the Premiership. We got to rename the stadium, so it's now called the Leftorium, which is nice. we're just winning the Premiership at the moment. Won the Champions League last year, so the game is still too easy, even when you put this handicap on yourself. But it's been a fun ride. There was one point where a guy played in my team for half a season. And he was one of my best players. And then I clicked on him and realized that he was actually right-footed. So I immediately released him. The fans didn't like that very much. I was really quite angry about it. He's gone. But so that's me. Just been doing some Ned Flanders Football Manager, really.
I can only hope that, and I know you can't do this in Football Manager, but could you imagine if you could only let left-handed fans into the stadium?
I like to think that's what we do.
Like before you're allowed entry, you have to write like a sheet of paper with your left hand just to prove that you are left-handed. Then you can enter the stadium. What a joy that would be.
That would be some good times. But I guess we should jump right into some of the games that have been added to Game Pass over the last week then.
Yeah, so this has been quite a busy week for new additions in Game Pass. So yeah, we've had five titles added. So we've had Grounded, which is a Xbox game preview rather than the full title, but it's Obsidian's latest effort. We've got Indie Gem The Tourist, Rogue Card Playing Game, Nowhere Profit, which is
your favourite.
My worst game in the world, probably. Formula One 2019, which was added surprisingly and has had some knock-on ramifications for our Leaving Soon titles, which we'll get into. And of course, the big one for everybody, Yakuza Kiwami 2, has finally made its way to Game Pass. So what did you think to all of these batch of new titles, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big week, definitely. Obviously, Grounded, even though it's early access, it's an Obsidian game. They're a big studio. And I, from what I can tell, it's had a really successful week as well. I think it's been topping like the Twitch charts of people watching it. It's the number one game sold on Steam this week. So like they're having a big, you know, a big week for it. And yeah, you know, that's a big game. There's some good little indie stuff in here. Obviously the Tourist really surprised me actually. We'll get into that soon, but I'm enjoying that a lot. You got yourself a bit of card fun with Nowhere Profit. I've not had a chance to look at that yet. And obviously the big one is definitely Yakuza Kiwami 2, because there's been a whole thing on the Game Pass Twitter feed for months now where they can't post anything without an entire army of like GIFs about, can we have Yakuza Kiwami 2 now? So that's good for all of them. They'll have to move on to asking for something new now.
They'll probably just ask for the Yakuza Remastered Collection to get lobbed onto Game Pass, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for, because I've not got around to playing that yet. I do own it, but without the incentive of getting a completion on the sheet to actually play it, so I've not yet found the time. But if that was to be coming to Game Pass, I'd be booting up Yakuza 3 the minute this ended to get straight into that game. But I'll briefly mention, because of course I have played Yakuza Kiwami 2, that it is, unsurprisingly, another fantastic Yakuza game. Mm. These Kiwami remakes just do so much to improve the core PS2 experience. And Kiwami 2, I actually think, is better than 1. It's much closer to 0 in terms of feel and combat. It's just a sublimely good video game. It's more soap opera, pulp, brilliant storytelling, crazy mini-games. There's this wonderful Club Hostess mini-game, which I put 6 or 7 hours into. I practically had a full release just on that club game. It's that good. It's just a wonderful experience. It really is. So if you haven't played any yet, please boot up Yakuza 0. So you should probably start with Yakuza Kiwami, then do 0. And then just get into this series, because it really is that good.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely one that's on my list. I think as soon as I get a bit of a gap where we don't have any painful Leaving Soon titles to play, I'm going to have to start hammering through these, and we'll definitely cover them in more detail on the show then.
Absolutely. But we both obviously gave Grounded a go, as did seemingly everybody on Twitch and Steam. So what did you make of this Honey, I Shrunk the Kids-esque crafting survival game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to note with Grounded, I mean, we already did, but it's worth really pressing the point home that this is an early access release. So this is by no means a finished game. And it very much shows when you play it. I mean, in terms of like bugs and issues in the game, there's not a ton of them, except for the giant bugs in the game, because it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. But, you know, it's like you get a bit of that. I got a bit like some audio issues. The frame rate was a bit choppy. But in general, it holds together. The main thing that really points it out as not being a complete experience is the fact that you're doing these story missions, which I was actually quite enjoying. And then after about half an hour of them, a message comes up saying, like, that's it for the single player for now, but stay tuned. We'll be adding more in, you know, soon. And it's like really, I was kind of hoping there'd be at least a couple of hours of the single player content there. So I was left a little cold by just how brief it was at the moment.
Yeah. To give that context, it does literally take 25 minutes to play through the single player in this game, as it is at the moment. There's not much there. It's essentially a glorified tutorial, so you can take it into the multiplayer maps and, you know, more expanded survival stuff if you wanted to. I think it's fine. I didn't dislike it. My heart sank a little bit when I realized how crafty and survival it was going to be. I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be. I think this is such a fun idea for a game. I'd almost rather it wasn't bogged down with all these systems you have to keep an eye on and everything like that. I kind of just want a straight adventure game with this.
Yeah, but I can see that.
But, you know, the crafting is simple. You can pick up stuff seemingly endlessly, which always helps. rather than having to worry about how much you've got in your pockets, which is nice. It's simple enough to craft. They've got this weird mechanic where to analyze items to get more crafting things, you have to stick it in this machine, but you can only use it 3 times in an hour, which just seems odd to me. I don't really get that.
It's a bit weird, yeah. So you find more of those stations around the map. So I've found like 3 or 4 now. And so eventually you can kind of like, you know, go from station to station and use them. But even so, I don't know. I don't know if that was necessary. I don't know why you couldn't just give me all the recipes when I get the items, really. Because they give you some, which makes it seem like they're doing that. And then you go to a science station and do some vague science on like a blade of grass and you get more stuff. It's a little confusing.
Yeah, it's a little strange, isn't it? I think the game controls fine. It's a little plodding in the way that I find most Obsidian RPGs to be. It could be smoother.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was surprised by that, actually, because I don't know about you, but I felt like a lot of the promos for this game made it seem like it'd be third person. And then
I jumped into it.
And, you know, this very much in terms of, not in terms of much else, but in terms of controls and movement and camera, this is an Obsidian, like Outer Worlds, Fallout New Vegas kind of experience. You know, it's first person. It runs fine, but is maybe slightly choppy in places. You know, that's your viewpoint for this game. And yeah, I definitely thought it was third person. So I kind of actually disappointed me a bit, to be honest. I was looking forward to it more in that context than a first person game. But I do think that above all else, I do love the novelty of, it's such an easy win to just be a tiny thing. And like, you know, kind of like for example, like a Minecraft style game, you know, you're chopping down trees to make stuff. Whereas in this, you've got an axe and you're chopping down individual blades of grass to make things. And like you're drinking literal like droplets of water to get your kind of first meter up. And I think it gains points just for that scenario. I find that quite fun.
Yeah, the world itself is pretty charming. It's chock full of like, you know, giant baseballs, which look like mountainous fins just because you're so small, and giant juice cartons, which you can't even climb over because, again, you're too small. The first-person view, as you say, I was somewhat surprised by it, but it does work in sense of making all the bugs and everything a little bit more creepy.
Yeah,
certainly the first time you run into a spider, it completely messed me up.
Oh Jesus. I actually... it's probably worth noting now that they've got this, like... They've got this really weird kind of setting for arachnophobia levels in this game. So it's like... You can actually make the spiders like incrementally less spidery as you go. So like, I think if you turn it to like the first level, it just gets rid of a couple of the legs. And then if you turn the, like, I'm scared of spiders scale to the maximum, they literally turn into just 2 white marshmallow looking circles that float in the air. Like when I saw that, I was like, that's a cute, funny setting. And, you know, it's getting a lot of press, you know, a lot of press coverage because it's quite a funny, unique thing, but I won't need that. And then it got to like nighttime and I was just strolling around outside and this big freaking wolf spider came at me and I died. Like I was like, Jesus Christ. I tell you what, I could maybe do with setting that arachnophobia mode up because, oh Christ.
I've never turned tail and ran as quickly as when I saw one of those giant spiders. I all of a sudden I felt deeply uncomfortable and just ran away. Same. So maybe
they're
I
so
do
loud
need
as well. Like they make God. The most horrendous kind of screechy.
Oh God!
I don't even want to talk about it.
It's like a chill up my spine. It's awful.
It really does. It's horrendous.
But you know, the game itself, it's first person, so it's melee combat. Which first person melee combat is never my favorite thing in the world ever. So that again is a little bit of a drawback for me, but. I don't know. This is shaping up to be a unique experience, even if it's not particularly one that I personally wanted. They're making what I think will be a fun game for a lot of people, but it's probably not the game I wanted it to be. And that's not the game's fault. It's just, it's not hitting the beats that I hope such a clever idea and such a clever setting could do. This could all change. It is early access. And the smart little bit of story that we got was pretty fun. It was enjoyable enough. There were some good little puzzles. But... yeah, it's shaping up well, but maybe not shaping up as I wanted it to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say at this point, my recommendation would be that, you know, like if you want to experience this as a kind of fun story adventure about, you know, trying to make yourself normal sized again so that you can get on with your life, then don't play it yet. Just keep an ear out for news on it and see when see when they expand the story to the point where it's actually finished. But if you want to play just a crafting game, you know, where you're just chopping stuff down and building things, like this is already a pretty solid game in that respect. You know, it's not as fully featured as games that are actually released in this genre, but there's enough there to you know, spend a good few hours in it now. So yeah, it's worth a look for those kind of people. But yeah, if you want the story content, I'd honestly just give it a miss for now. Just wait.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Of course, as well as Grounded, we did also manage to pump a lot of time into The Tourist, which is Shinen's new game, which came out on Nintendo Switch a while ago to quite a bit of fanfare, and I didn't even know it was having a console update. So I was quite surprised to see it pop up on Game Pass. This was quite the treat and surprise for me, because I probably would have bought this on Switch.
Mm.
So we've both pumped a lot of time into this. I've 100%ed it, but I don't know how far along are you with this?
I'm 80% the way through, and I will be making that 100 as soon as we finish this podcast. So yeah, I'm not far away from the end either. This game completely caught me off guard. I actually hadn't heard about it at all, and maybe judging the book by its cover a little bit, I sort of looked at the style of it without digging too much deeper, and I was just like, ugh, you know. This just looks like some typical indie fare. Like I'll play it at some point, but I'm not in a rush. And then yeah, I kind of dropped half an hour into it, and I'm a big fan of this. Like it just hooked me from there.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely fantastic. I really like this game. It's got a gorgeous art style. It's this voxel art style, but it's so colourful. It's so crisp, and I've never seen the style look better.
Yeah, so
this is as crisp and as clean as I've ever seen. Apparently, this is getting a free Series X upgrade as well,
which I found quite funny.
I can't wait to see what it's going to look like.
I love that, like, because it was like that was heavily advertised on the store page for it, and I just found it really funny that, like, you know, I mean, I'm sure it'll look even better, but you know, this is already a fairly low kind of. It's not exactly using the full horsepower of a Series X, surely. So. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what that update is, but I think it already runs and looks as good as it needs to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, but the actual idea of the game is that you just play this dude who's on holiday and he just gets into misdemeanors. He just uncovers some bizarre monuments which has some great hidden secret to it, and all of a sudden he's traipsing around these islands trying to solve this mystery just because, well, he's on holiday, he might as well have an experience. And it's just so charming. It really is,
yeah.
The lead character design. How much do you love the lead character design? There's this big, hefty dude with a big, floppish, floppy hair and a mustache. He's great.
He's in his stupid shades all the time. I just love him. He's great. I just love that, as you said, like, the story is just that he's, you know, he's kind of stumbled upon some monument and he's just like, yeah, you know, why not? I got no better to do. Like, it just feels like quite a fun, natural story in that way. You know, there's no like big quest driving him to do it. He's kind of just a bit bored on his holiday, really, and he just thought, I might as well check out this giant monument.
You know, it's the actual gameplay itself. It's pretty simple, but there's some nice little puzzles. There's a lot of fun little ways that you've got to get lights to go onto lights and platforms and jumping across things. And it's not exactly the most taxing thing in the world, but everything requires a little bit of thought and a little bit of skill, just at the right level to never be frustrating and to keep everything moving along, but not to feel like you're on autopilot at the same time. It really captures a nice balance in that sense, for me at least. And
yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, the kind of puzzles and the platform in a where you'd kind of want them to be for this game. You know, the game's primarily more about, I almost find it more about its kind of charming side quests in a way than the main plot line. Mm. I think it's full of just like lovely little side quests. Like, you know, you'll need to take photos of certain things to like fill up an art gallery, or you need to change your costume to get into different places, or like, you know, like dress correctly for a footballing competition or something like that. You'll bump into like a couple who want to go on a new holiday, and you have to show them kind of tour guides, which are how you get to different places, and figure out which place they'd like to go to. And I've just loved doing those things actually more than the monument stuff. I just think it's full of awesome little stuff. Like, there's loads of great mini games through it as well. Mm. Like, there's an arcade with mini games in, there's like a surfing game, and it's packed with just really charming little bits of content everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to mention the mini games because there's some really fun mini games here. You mentioned, you know, the soccer guy, the football guy. You can just drill penalties into a spot. That's a good time. You've got this surfing game, which goes on just long enough to feel quite fun. You've got a rhythm game with some bongos, drums to play. That's a really good time. These arcade games, you've got a breakout clone, like a Bubble Bobble clone and just a like almost like an F-Zero clone as well. And
yeah,
they're just really good fun. Those are fun things to play just on them on their own, and yet it's tied up in this game world, which is so charming and filled with funny characters and great dialogue, which controls well and looks gorgeous. I really enjoyed this. I played it for 5 hours to get the full 100%. It's not the longest game in the world, but I don't think I've enjoyed 5 hours of the game as much as this for a long time.
Yeah, I agree completely. As I said, as soon as we're done with the show, I'm going to be finishing this off because I just think it's great. I mean, we talked before about, you know, on the show a couple of times about how the Banner Saga was one of our kind of favorite Game Pass surprises, where it's a series that we probably wouldn't have played and then we did and we really enjoyed it. Like, The Tourist might now be my number one favorite Game Pass surprise because I didn't know what this was. I had no interest in it and I've just had such a great time of it. And I wouldn't have touched this if it didn't show up in Game Pass. I just don't think I would have ever got around to it.
No, I'm thrilled that people are going to get the opportunity to play this one. And I'm thrilled I didn't spend, £15 on it, though. It's absolutely worth £15. I think it is on sale on Switch at the moment if you did want to have this handheld. And I imagine it's a great handheld experience as well. But it's just chock full of lovely moments, you know. Just all the islands are based off actual kind of places. So you've got like a Santorini clone and an Ibiza clone. You know, the Ibiza place has a big dance floor where you can just make this fat, weird guy dance and twirl around. I watched that dude dance for like 5 minutes. I was just having such a good time watching him freak out. It was great.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, no, I think if you've got any time this week at all, this is such a quick game, such an easy one to get into, and I think it's such a fantastic experience. I can't really recommend it highly enough. I mean, I've scored this an 8. And yeah, it could easily be a 9. I just think it's a really fun game.
Yeah, we're on a very similar page with this. So I gave this an 8 in the end, but I did toy with a 9 for a while. And a 9 is not a score I give out lightly. You know, that's kind of, you know, like Nier Automata is the kind of game I give a 9 to. So for The Tourist to be in that conversation is a real achievement. But yeah, I think it's fantastic. Like the only tiny thing that frustrated me in this game is I found that in some of the platform areas, like when you're doing these kind of monument puzzles, I had a strange issue with the kind of platforming and the perspective of the camera. And it's sometimes I'd just occasionally there'd be rooms where I'd just keep falling and I felt like I wasn't the problem. But that's literally the only knock I've got. So like that maybe held it back from a 9, but still 8 out of 10, like great game, and couldn't recommend more that people try and find 5 hours for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so there's been a new batch of Leaving Soon games announced this past week. But first off, we've got a little bit of a bone to pick with Microsoft, who are meant to give us 2 weeks' notice before a game is to leave the service. So last week, and a couple of weeks before that, I was saying how I had no games to complete for once because I'd already beat them. Well, apparently somebody at Microsoft, probably Phil Spencer, the asshole, was listening to this podcast and went, well, we'll show him. Because on Tuesday night, we quickly realized that Formula One 2018 had been added as a surprise addition to the Leaving Soon titles.
Yep, exactly. And we had no way of knowing if that was going to be leaving. You know, the standard is for games to leave in a two-week gap, but they usually join in a big block, right? So it's like, here's the next block of games, whereas this one just snuck in with 3 days to go before the last one's left. So we were left thinking, you know, do we have to finish this in the 3 days or have we got 2 weeks? And yeah, it turned out we had 3 days, which was nice.
Yeah, we only kind of clocked it was definitely going to be 3 days when Formula One 2019, which was added this week, just dropped in on Thursday. And we both basically said, well, it's definitely going to be going then because it's essentially a like-for-like substitution.
Exactly.
So we obviously, a game like this doesn't have a natural completion, but as we always try to create our own if there isn't one. For Formula One 2018, the goal was to complete a season of, you know, in a career mode. So there's 21 races in an F1 season. And, like, to play it properly, you should be doing, like, 15 laps and all the practice sessions and the qualifying sessions. So this was quite the undertaking, but we did somehow both manage to complete a season in time. So shall we delve into this one? Despite the fact you can't play 2018, but you could play 2019, and it's pretty much going to be the same game.
Yeah, exactly. So I've put an hour into 2019 just to, you know, make sure that it's your typical annual franchise kind of thing where it's very much the same game. You know, it's got a few little tweaks and upgrades, but anything we say about 2018 if you know, if you're wanting to play an F1 game in Game Pass, obviously 2019's there. It's this game, but with a few improvements. So this is all relevant to that. But yeah, so F1 2018, as you said, a game we had to do an entire season in about 3 days. This is actually a very, very good racing game. I wish I wouldn't have had to rush it, but nonetheless, it's still a very good game. And there's just a ton of depth to it as well. I think, I'm not really an F1 fan, but I think if you were an F1 fan, this series could be just one of your favorite games easily.
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense that F1, I don't hate Formula One, but it's not something I've ever massively enjoyed because I find the boffiny technical aspects of it just goes over my head. I'm not a big cars guy. And that's basically half the love of it, really. If you like F1, you love the engineering side as much as the racing side. And I'm not massively on board with either. Yeah. But this is a Codemasters game. And everybody knows that when it comes to racing titles, Codemasters is probably the granddaddy of the franchise at this point, aren't they? They've got a long and storied history developing these titles. And this is another very, very good racing game. I think it's pretty pick up and play, even if you don't know really what F1 is. It does have a bit of assumed knowledge. It kept telling me to turn on DRS, and I had no clue what that was or why I couldn't use it whenever I wanted to use it. That threw me. It's only like 3 races to understand what the hell was happening with that.
There's all kinds of stuff you can do, like mid-race. So it's like, as you said, it's quite pick up and play in that, you know, you jump into these races, like the, you know, there's a bunch of assists on the car to help you out, because if you turn those off, it controls like an actual F1 car, and unless you're an F1 driver, you're not going to be able to do that. So, you know, it's got these assists on, it's got like a racing line on the screen to help visualize the kind of best path to take on the track, which is super helpful. But then also, if you do want to dig deeper into it, like while you're driving the car in the middle of a race, like you can open up little menus at the side to like change your like differential and your like front brake bias, whatever the hell that's going to do. You can make it so that your fuel is a richer mix of the fuel, which means it runs out faster, but you go a bit faster. Like, there's all kinds of crazy in-depth nonsense you can do as well. So I think it strikes a really good balance there, actually.
Could you ever, I mean, maybe you could do it, but whenever I try to open up that menu, continue racing and pick an option, I just couldn't make that work. I don't know if I was doing something wrong or whether my mind's just not acclimatized to it. But the minute I open that option to have a look at my fuel types, the next second I was in a wall. It didn't matter when.
I did all right with it, but I think the key was just to like, I'd only bring that menu up if I was on like a big long straight or something, you know. So like, but it's kind of an extra skill that you need to know in this game potentially that isn't in a normal racing game, you know. You kind of, I mean, much like an F1 driver, I guess, you know, like when you're on a part where you can go autopilot a bit, you can check your computer and maybe change some sort of settings and stuff. Like, I like that it's there, but yeah, it's definitely an adjustment to get used to doing it.
No, I think it's a great addition to have. I think it's really cool. I just couldn't manage it. Even on a straight, I just all of a sudden start veering off straight into a tire wall. I couldn't help it. I mean, I was always on the verge of veering off in this game at all times anyway, because I'm not the best at it. Yeah. You know, it's one of those where I had pretty much everything set to easy. And even then, I was still struggling at times. But that's partly because I'm not great at racing games, and partly because this has a lot of depth to it. When you want to, you can tweak all sorts of things. There's menus just chock full of expressions and car stuff that means nothing to me.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what any of that
absolutely
is.
Absolutely nothing. I'm just picking random options. I'm pointing. Yeah. I'm just going that and hoping for the best. But if you're a fan of this stuff, this must be like manna from heaven.
Oh God, absolutely. Like, it's just, there's so much here. Like, I mean, as you said, I think it's good because we don't know a lot about it, and you can still, you get into enough of it that you're happy. You know, you don't need to tweak the specifics of your car, but you can still kind of understand the flow of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's pretty handy. I mean, there's loads of extra little bits as well. So the career mode, you choose what team you want to start with. So I went in a Renault because the last time I watched F1, Renault were really good. Apparently, they're not now.
No, they're very much not.
I battled on anyway for the yellow brand. And, you know, you just play through each race. I've got 3 practice sessions, which I started doing for all of 2 races before I just got bored of doing all the practice stuff. And I just did a quick lap, then went straight into qualifying. And yeah, then just did the race.
I did that too, definitely. But I think doing those practice things at the start actually really, it again shows you some of that complexity of this game, because when you're in the practice sessions, basically you can do as many of these different types of program as you want, and they give you like research points, but in the end it's not enough points that you care about doing them. But there's like separate practice rounds for like tire management, so the game will kind of teach you how to like save your tires to last longer if you know, if you need to like not taking up a pit stop or something. There's one for fuel management, so the game will teach you how to like ease off on the corners rather than breaking at the last second to save on fuel. And like, I find it fascinating that that's a thing in a game. Like, I don't know, I've never thought of that sort of stuff playing any other sort of typical racing game. So I love that it's there, but yeah, I was the same as you. I did some of that stuff at first, and then eventually I thought, you know what, I get what that is now. I don't need to do that on every track. So I'm just going to do one practice lap, then the qualifying lap, and then do the race. And, you know, that was definitely enough for me.
And of course, it's not surprising with these being actual tracks, but all 21 tracks are great. Like, you know, is it particularly surprising that an F1 track is fun to race around? Probably not. But they are really fun to race. Some are more strategic, some are more tactical. Some are quite slow. I hate Monaco. Like, I thought I'd love Monaco, but I could not Monaco.
Yeah. I think that's one massive strength actually to this game, is that this game makes me appreciate a lot of the aspects of F1 a hell of a lot more than watching F1 has ever done. Like, I now like fully get how frustrating street circuits are in F1, because there's nowhere to overtake. They're so narrow. Mm. You can't, you know, your only bet of winning is to just, you know, get past everyone when they go in the pit lane, and then go fast enough that when you pit, you're still in front of them. There's absolutely no opportunities to do anything on those courses, and they're so narrow. Some of the turns, like, your car just fits through them. It's horrendous. And, you know, stuff like that, whenever I've kind of watched F1, I've just never really, you know, I've never noticed how extreme that was. So I love that I'm seeing that in the form of a game. It obviously shows that this is a really kind of faithful and well-made game. And yeah, I think one of the big strengths of this as well is that when I first started it and I sort of saw the default settings for how long each thing would be, like qualifying and the race. So it's set by default to be qualifying is just a single lap, which is, I think it's a good setting. You can change it to be the full F1 experience where you drive around the track for an hour if you want to, but I think that's overkill. And the races are set to be 25% of the laps of an F1 race, which is usually still about 15 or 20 laps on a course, which, when I first saw that, I was like, oh my God, I can't drive around a course for 15 or 20 laps. Like, I can't do a race that lasts half an hour. Like, I'll be so bored. But then you're kind of not bored. I don't know. Like, especially if you're in a race that's close, like if you're in the middle of the pack and you're trying to find opportunities to overtake, and you're sort of, you've just got this level of focus on just absolutely nailing each lap to try and get every sort of tenth of a second you can out of maybe the lead someone's got on you. You know, like, maybe you've just put fresher tires on your car, so you're quicker and they're like 5 seconds ahead of you, but you're gaining by a second a lap. Like, it's actually, it's so much more satisfying than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, it's quite an incredible magic trick it pulls off, isn't it? Because as you say, you think 15, 20, however many laps, it'll get a little bit boring, but because you have to be perpetually focused, you can't ever not be fully paying attention to what you're doing, because if you are, you'll just go straight off the track and into the dirt.
Yeah,
like, you're so focused on it that it kind of passes by quicker than you think. And when you are battling for, be it a podium or even just to hold on to a point scoring position, it's really quite fun. They've got this wonderful damage system as well, so, you know, if you keep clipping the win of your car, eventually it'll need replacing. But if you've got a couple of laps left, they'll say, well, maybe just stay out there and try and hold on. And I had one where my front wing was basically going to fall off. And I was sat in sixth place, and the guy who I was chasing in the championship was the place behind me. And I just spent two laps playing spoiler, just trying to stay in front of him. I knew I couldn't catch up to anybody, but I knew I could block off the racing angles as much as humanly possible.
Yeah,
it was so much fun. It was such a good racing experience, which you normally don't get in these sort of titles, particularly when you're not even in like a top scoring position. I'm sat in seventh, and yet it felt like the most exciting race in my life.
So there's a lot of those moments. Yeah, like, really? So I had a bit of a different experience to you overall in the game, just because I picked Mercedes, who have the best car. And especially early on when I had the difficulty set to quite low, just to quickly go on that, actually, the difficulty settings in this game are fantastic. There's a scale that you can put up in single numbers from like 1 to 100. So like, between each race, you know, if you win by a mile, you can just nudge it up by like 5 or 10 points maybe, and, you know, kind of try and find that sweet spot. So I love that anyway. But so being that I was in a Mercedes, some races I was just winning by a mile because their car was so much better than the other cars. And those races, much like in normal Formula One, those races can be like super dull, because I'm just winning by a mile. But then my favorite race was one where I started, and on the first turn, like Vettel being a clumsy bastard, he like spun my car. He went into my wheel and spun me, and he got like a pit penalty and stuff. But I had to like go into the pits and everything. And then I came out in 20th, and I had the fastest car on the grid, but I was in last place now. And the whole race was just me kind of just blasting past all these like slower kind of backmarker cars. And then like, I think with 2 laps to go, I went from, I was in 6th with 2 laps to go, and then got up to 4th for the last lap. And then I took over someone on the final turn to get 3rd, which got me on the podium. And like, it was one of my favorite racing game races that I've ever done. Like, it was so exciting and so fun.
Yeah. It's one of those titles, isn't it? And it's just, there's a lot here. There really is. I think if you're a racing game fan, you're going to get a hell of a lot out of this. They do these weird pit interviews, which were a little bit naff.
Yeah, I got so sick of those after my 21st race.
Poor journalist impersonating person would have to come up and go, oh, that was a good race today. And you just have to put the same stock answer in every single time. And oh, God.
I had a really frustrating one with that, where sometimes she'd just say stuff to me that wasn't true. And like, I had no way out of it other than to annoy someone. Like, I'd win the race or something. She'd be like, oh, looks like you had some reliability issues out there today. And it's like, I didn't. But then my options are just like, my options are basically just to like throw my team under the bus in general, or like specifically throw the reliability engineers under the bus. And it's like, nothing happened. Like, the car was fine. I don't know what you want from me. So those were a bit annoying, as was having to do the interview like after every single race. But you know, it's a part of giving off that overall kind of F1 feel. And this game does nail that. So I don't want to be too harsh on that.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you're a Formula One fan, this is if you love it as normal as possible, then this is probably a good time for you. I think I gave this a 7, probably because I just feel there's elements of the career mode which could be tightened up. And partly because it's looking like F1 2019 and eventually 2020 are going to come to the service. And I feel like they're probably going to be better. So I kind of want room to grow in my score.
that's fair. I gave this an 8. I think this is up there on my favorite like simulation racing games that I've ever played. Like I'm more of a kind of Forza Horizon burnout guy usually, you know, an arcadey racer or an open world one. But if I'm going to sit down and play like a more serious racing game, this is probably now the series I'd look to for that. So I gave this an 8 out of 10. And just to touch briefly on my hour with F1 2019, since that's the game that people would probably now play because it's in Game Pass. Basically, you're looking at the same game in terms of all of the stuff we just spoke about. The key differences really are that your career mode in the new game now starts in Formula 2. Or Formula 2. And they just put you in, they drop you into a few races at that point, and you kind of make decisions that mold your character. So it's quite cool, actually. It's like you'll jump into a race with like 2 laps to go, and you're in third place, but your car's got an engine problem. So the decision to make is like, do you want to pull over for your teammate to get past because he's got a better car and he can push for more points? Or do you want to be greedy and keep your position so you get more points? And you do 3 or 4 of those that kind of mold your character, and then you go into F1, and that just adds a nice little bit to it. And also there's like some narrative stuff there where some of the characters you interact with in Formula 2, they follow you into F1 as well. So you've got a bit more kind of rivalry, got a bit more of a built-in rivalry there, rather than in F1 2018, you kind of just pick a real world driver that you know as a rival, whereas in this one they've made up some characters. So I think that's a strength. But obviously, if people didn't want that, if they just wanted the grid of normal drivers, they can just play the championships individually. They don't need to necessarily play the career. But so F1 2019 is definitely worth a look.
Cool. I suppose we should also briefly mention there is a new batch of Leaving Soon titles which were announced just yesterday for us. So this is all pretty new. We've not really had any time to do them, though we have completed 2 already, so that does make life a bit easier. So the 3 games which are leaving this next 2 weeks are Devil May Cry 5, Kingdom Come Deliverance, and Yoku's Island Express. So, what did you make of these then?
So this is a bit of a tricky one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, it's always great when we've already played some of these games and we've already completed Yoku's Island Express and DMC5. So that's a big win. But on the other side of it, Kingdom Come Deliverance was like, I think if you asked me for a top three of the games that I'm the most scared of having to complete in Game Pass, that would be on that list. So yeah, even though we get off the hook with two of them, we've got a single 50-hour game that we're going to have to try and get through. So,
yeah. God, I don't want to play Kingdom Come Deliverance. I just, oh God, it's just not for me. I know I've not played it, so I can't say it's not for me, but it's not for me.
I've spent half an hour on it, Josh, and it's not for you. Let me tell you, it's not for you. Oh no,
I have dreaded this. I have dreaded it. I don't even like medieval fantasy settings. Oh God, I don't even have that to cling on to. And it still looks so cumbersome. And oh, crikey.
So yeah, obviously, these three games have just been added to Leaving Soon very recently. So yeah, we'll definitely cover Kingdom Come on the show in 2 weeks' time. And we'll cover DMC5 and Yoku on next week's show. But yeah, definitely terrified of Kingdom Come Deliverance, that is for sure.
Oh God, I just can't do it. There may never be another show. This could be it for me. I cannot beat the sheet because I do not want to play Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Oh, right then. Well, moving on to some other great stuff that we really enjoyed. Let's move into a bit of what are we playing? The frequent segment where we talk about other games that we've been playing through the week that aren't necessarily Leaving Soon games or new editions. So I understand this week, Josh, you've been digging into the super hilarious, puzzly, physicsy platformer kind of games in Game Pass.
Yeah, well, in simpler times when I didn't think I had to complete an entire F1 career in 2 days, I had a little bit of time to pick up something, and I kind of fancied, for some unbeknownst reason, playing these weird physics games, which have become endlessly popular this past couple of weeks. So I downloaded a couple. I downloaded Human Fall Flat and Totally Reliable Delivery Service. Yeah. And my question to you, Andy, is, who likes these games? And what sick freaks keep making them?
The answer to the first one of that is nobody. And the second one is, again, I don't know. I mean, maybe they like them. Maybe the people who make them are the only people who like them. Because I can't, I've never met someone who is dying to play one of these games for more than, you know, more than maybe the odd 15 minutes in a co-op, you know, load two of the weird physics-y blobby characters into the world and laugh at how bad they control and then turn it off. Like, that's, I feel like that's all these games are for, you know? Like, there's, I feel like Goat Simulator isn't a good game, but Goat Simulator actually does at least do that, you know? It's, you can jump in and you're a stupid goat and the physics are a mess, and look at all the stupid stuff the goat does, and then you turn it off after 20 minutes, you know, unless you do and beat the sheet challenge and then you have to play it for 2 hours and you grow to hate it. But, you know, that game is ridiculously the closest I've seen in this genre to actually landing on what I think the goal is of these games. But yeah, Human Fall Flat is, I mean, it's probably the best made attempt at one of these games, but that doesn't mean it's good or fun, I would say.
Yeah, it's that impressive balance where you go, okay, this is probably about as good as somebody's going to make one of these games. It also happens to be a nightmare of a time to actually experience. It's just completely miserable gaming experience, but at least it's moderately competently made to work. So Human Fall Flat is essentially, it's a massive sandbox where you control this weird squiggly dude made like out of plasticine. And you've just got to get to the end of a level and fall through the sky again. And it's controls abysmally. It's meant to. Like, you have to raise your arms to lift things. And the way you clamber up a rock is just infuriatingly painful.
Yeah, it really
is. Have to look downwards to start pushing up and then look upwards to climb up. And it just ruins the camera every single time you try to do it. But like I said, this is bad, but by the levels of this genre, it's almost good because at least I can have the general feeling that I'm making it do what it has to do.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I found with this game that I never particularly liked the game, but the early levels, like what they were asking you to do was simple enough that I didn't hate it yet. I just kind of thought, all right, you know, I'm this weird plasticine-y blob man and I have to move his arms individually to grab stuff. And, you know, it's a bit goofy and silly, but it's fine. You know, the levels are simple enough. I just have to grab some objects and move them around. It's all right. But then as the game goes on, they ask kind of more and more of you, but you're still constrained by this appalling control scheme. And like, yeah, as the hours ticked away with this game, my rating for it just dropped and dropped and dropped.
Yes.
Like I was so unbearably sick of this game by the time I finished it. Cause I mean, it takes a good 5 or 6 hours, right, to actually finish the levels in this thing. It's not a quick game. And there was a point by the end, there was a level where you had to drive this truck. And we should point out to our listeners here that you don't actually just get to drive vehicles like a normal game in this. You only interact with your stupid blobby man's hands. So you have to literally grab the wheels and grab the kind of control stick on the car and move them the exact right amount to be able to do anything. And you'll do it wrong all the time because, you know, that's the joke and it's totally funny. But yeah, there's this level where you have to drive this truck on this winding path and then stop it and then fill it with coal and then drive it back. And it was one of the worst gaming experiences of my life. I hated it so much.
It takes so long to drive this truck. It takes, because if you have it going at any level of speed, you'll just go off the edge.
Yeah.
So you have to crawl it around this long winding road. It takes about 20 minutes in all.
Yeah, and another bonus is that it takes about 10 minutes to load the coal up. And if you do fall off the track and the coal's in the car, it won't be in the car when it respawns. So
you'll
be doing that 10 minutes again as well. Like, genuinely awful. Like, really, I'm actually getting a little bit angry thinking about it. Like, I hated it that much. But yeah, again, you know, this is apparently what this genre is. I don't know. I mean, I played a little bit of this with my girlfriend once, and we had that kind of typical 5 or 10 minutes of fun, you know, watching the goofy characters, and you could kind of grab the other character and throw them around. And, you know, again, that's the only part of these games that I seem to understand. Like, I just 10 minutes of messing about with the characters. The rest of it's dreadful.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the one thing I thought Human Fall Flat did quite well is it had this fairly grand music, which occasionally played in the background of it. Which I quite liked, and it would randomly just cut off. It would just stop.
Like a hard stop, yeah.
It's like 20 seconds in, it would just stop. It would stop playing them, and for the rest of the 15-minute level, you'd just be doing it in deathly silence. And I was like,
it's probably just part of the joke again, isn't it? Just this whole joke of look how bad our game is. Like, it's just, ugh, yeah.
It's an unbearable experience, but I played Human Fall Flat, and I thought, well, I've got a feel now.
What the baseline is for this game, you know.
As we like to call them, it's the wanky physics genre.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt like I'd got a feel for it, so I figured I might just pick up another one.
Yeah, that's fair.
Jump straight into it. So I thought, well, what's another one? Okay, we've got Totally Reliable Delivery Service. Let's give that a go. I'm already accustomed to the hate at this point.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Another couple of hours of doing it, and oh my God, nothing can prepare you for how bad Totally Reliable Delivery Services.
Yeah. I've sat on this one now for a few days, like my thoughts on it, and I think this is my most hated game ever. I genuinely hate it that much. It's so bad. I can't even stress enough to people how bad this game is. So, like, to briefly go back to Human Fall Flat, that's a game where I kind of said my opinion of it dropped over time. So I kind of felt like it was like a 6 out of 10-ish game for half an hour, and then it dropped to a 5, and then it clung on to a 4 out of 10 by the end. This game is infinitely worse than that game. There is no hope for this game. It tries to control the same way. Again, you're a blobby physics-y man. It's actually identical. The arms, you control the arms again with triggers, and you have to control all the vehicles by moving the arms rather than driving properly. So it really just apes all of that, except for it's completely uncontrollable. Like, the best way I can describe the movement in this game, and I don't know if you experienced it quite to the same extent as me, but it sometimes feels like you're walking the character around with the analog stick on your controller, and it feels like there's an invisible person next to you who also has an analog stick to control the character, and they're just like waggling that in any direction at any time. Like, it just, the character will just do whatever they want. Like, you'll be trying to walk forwards and you'll be pushing the stick forwards and you'll jump in the air and he'll just go, he'll go left, he'll go backwards, he'll stay still. There's literally no, there's no logic behind the movement. Like, Human Fall Flat controls in a dopey, awful way, but you at least feel like you understand why the movement happened in that game. This game, you do not. It just does whatever it wants, whenever it wants, and it's the most infuriating control experience I've ever had in a game.
Yeah, to dig into how this one actually controls, so to pick up something, you hold both of the triggers at the same time. So one trigger controls each arm, so you put down RT and LT to hold something. To lift it in the air, and you always have to lift something in the air, otherwise it's just not going to move, you have to hold down both bumper buttons. So already you're in an awkward position with your hands. That's not the most comfortable thing in the world. You control the character with the left stick. You control the camera with the right stick. You jump with the A button. If by this point you realized you ran out of fingers and you may have to use your chin to control it, I used my chin about 25% of the time I was playing this game to control the camera because it was the only way to play. It was actively painful by the time I finish.
So I have one of those Xbox Elite controllers that cost way too much money. And they come with, like, you can click these little paddles into the back of the controller and you can map them to any button. And that controller is obviously intended for, like, you know, high energy, intense kind of, you know, multiplayer shooting games or something, maybe, you know, it's meant to be this premium controller. Like, that controller has been most useful to me so far for mapping some of the controls in Totally Reliable Delivery Service to the back paddles so that I can still use the thumbsticks. Like, that's been the absolute best example of that control for me so far, because this control scheme is dreadful.
It just doesn't work, does it? So essentially the point of the game is you are a delivery driver. You take things to certain locations. That may sound quite simple, and it should be in theory, but your biggest challenge in Totally Reliable Delivery Service is getting the box in the car. I'm not even joking. You will spend about 60% of a single mission just trying to put the thing in the car.
Yeah,
it's constant.
And for added fun as well, sometimes these boxes will be like explosive. So you'll try and put it in the car for 5 minutes, and then for whatever reason, it'll just blow up and you'll fail and you'll just have to do it again and
just
again.
Do it again.
Or, you know, maybe it'll be like, well, you know, it was nice and challenging getting that in the vehicle, but this time you're riding a helicopter, which you need to somehow pilot using this awful two triggers, two hands control scheme. And I just...
Did you ever figure out how to control a helicopter?
You know, amazingly, helicopters actually became the cornerstone of how I managed to get through this game. Because
I could do the cars.
Yeah, like a bit of background on this. So I think there's 110 deliveries in this game, and we decided that doing 50 of them, you know, near enough half, was sufficient to say we'd finish the game. There's a nice achievement at that point. I think you finish unlocking all the vehicles at 50, so we thought that'll do. And yeah, I somehow managed to get used to the helicopters to the point where I think I did about 20 odd helicopter missions for my 50, because the key win with the helicopter is it's easier to place the box in the helicopter than it is to place it in the car. So
I could not get
less height to
that helicopter.
There's just a little bit less height, whereas some of those cars are trying to lift like a box into the back of it, as you said, just took 10 minutes. So I just couldn't be done with that anymore. But yeah, I mean, look, that's the whole game. That's it. That's all this is. It's, you make some deliveries, and the game will actively try and screw you on these deliveries as well, I should point out. So, you know, maybe you will have been driving for 3 or 4 minutes awfully. You'll be having a horrendous time while you do this, of course, because of the control scheme. And, you know, you're trying to get this fragile package somewhere. And then you'll be driving on the road, and for whatever reason, a grate below you will just open up and spew water everywhere, and it'll just push you into the sea, and they'll be like, sorry, you failed that mission, you better do it again. And again, I think the game thinks that's funny. I guess that's what it's trying to do. It's trying to be like, oh, look at us in our wacky, dreadful game. Now you're going to have to do that again. That's annoying. And you're like, you know what? Yes, it is. It's very annoying. Like, I don't get it.
That is like, it's topped off by the fact that once you fail a mission, you can't just quickly restart it.
No.
You have to go all the way back to where you were, do it all again. And it's not quick to get around this map. Oddly enough, you'd think that driving's the quickest way to get around because it's an actual machine. But I found the quickest way to get about is to sprint and jump.
Yeah, yeah.
And that eventually, if you get into this weird rhythm of sprinting and jumping, a lot of the times I didn't even stick a box in a car. I just started running to the objective because it was quicker and easier than trying to actually battle the control scheme. You've probably done something wrong when it's easier just to run to an objective rather than do it that way.
But even then, though, I find that you have that issue with the character just feeling like they're controlled by an otherworldly force. Like, sometimes you'll be walking around and it'll be like, I'm just going to sway left and right. And, you know, it might sound like that might be, you know, like you're carrying a heavy box. You know, for someone who's not played the game, they might think, oh, well, you know, I'm sure that's just because you're carrying this heavy thing and it's quite a natural thing that you'd be waving around a bit. I cannot stress to you enough how much that is not what's happening. Like, it's just the way your character moves is completely... there's no logic to it. It's the absolute worst. And sometimes they'll just get like their foot stuck in the ground and, you know, cause that's funny because these games don't work, or they'll get an arm stuck in a car. And, you know, again, I'm sure that's good fun. Like, I really hate this so much. It's so unbearable. I mean, so like I said, I gave Human Fall Flat a 4 out of 10, which is a pretty low score. I give this a 1. I was tempted to give it a 0, and maybe if at some point I decide I'm going to give a 0 out, this will be the game that gets it. I just think it's the worst. I mean, so we both played Superman 64 not too long ago when we, you know, we had one of our weekends of let's play all the worst games we can possibly think of. And Superman 64 was constantly had a bad rep for being the worst game. You know, a lot of people would say it is. And it is awful. It's a real awful game. It's probably another game I'd give a 1 to, but I would score that one as a higher one than the one I would give this game. I really would. That's how bad this game is.
Yeah, it's about as unbearable as it gets. And I think I gave this a 2. I just have a very quick shout out to what is possibly the worst mission I've ever tried to play in a video game, which is, in an almost welcome act of variety, the game occasionally tasks you with shooting a fish via a conveyor belt into a target on like a skyscraper or whatever it is. And I don't know if these are possible, but I must have spent about 20-30 minutes and I couldn't even get the fish to fly, let alone fly in the right direction.
I managed to get the fish in the air, but again, these missions are also broken because the problem is that it's like, you know, yeah, there'll be a window on a building and they'll be like, right, here's this vehicle with a conveyor belt on it, you need to launch the fish through off the conveyor belt into the window, you know, great, all right, that's at its core, that's actually probably the most creative mission that this game has by a long way. So, you know, fair play to them. But then you set up your conveyor belt, you try and put the fish on it. You probably end up going on the conveyor belt yourself by mistake and getting flew off into the distance about a million times. But even when you master the art of getting the fish on the conveyor belt, the problem is that you'll launch this fish off and it will miss the target because the precision needed is insane. But then you can't, again, like we said earlier, you can't just quick retry this. Like, the fish is now miles away. You know, you might have drove the vehicle to somewhere that isn't the spot it started in. So you've now got to go back to the machine, restart the whole mission, get that whole process started again from scratch. And it's just, I honestly think it would take me about 50 goes to land that shot, which would probably take me about 2 hours, 3 hours in the game. And there's no world where I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's just abysmal, isn't it? It's just one of the worst things I've ever played. And I can't. I'm just so glad we only had 250 of these 100 missions. I think 10 of them are DLC.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Now, this game is chock full of DLC and cosmetic stuff, which it tries to trick you into buying as if you hadn't been punished enough. But yeah, it's just awful, isn't it? It's just bad.
Yeah, yeah. So bad. It's a bad genre, and yet, like, Totally Reliable Delivery Service is the absolute worst of already a bad genre. So I think, I don't know about you, Josh, my recommendation is just to not touch any of these games, frankly. Like,
never play them. Just don't play them. Yeah. It's not fun.
If you really insist on having a dopey 20 minutes of co-op fun, then yeah, Goat Simulator probably is your best bet. I wouldn't go near these two, in particular Totally Reliable Delivery Service, which is the worst game of all time.
And when Goat Simulator is the answer, God help you what the question is.
All right, so we've just got a couple of news stories now then, I guess, to go through before we wrap up this week's show. The big news from this week, I guess, really, is there was a leak that then got confirmed, which is that Halo's multiplayer is going to be entirely free to play this time round, which is a big move for the franchise.
Yeah, it's looking like they're going full battle pass, isn't it? That's the way they're going to do it. Is that,
yeah,
you play Halo multiplayer. I don't play Halo in general. So you'll know if this is a good thing or a bad thing better than I will. But does this sit as a good move for you, or does this feel like it's a bit of a cash grab?
See, it's really weird, this, because I feel like I'm in such an opposite camp to a lot of people on the internet on this, where, like, I almost feel like some people, you know, because we live in this bubble where, you know, we don't understand why someone would play on an Xbox console and not have Game Pass, right? Like, Game Pass is too good of a deal. There's no reason why you wouldn't be a Game Pass subscriber. But yet there is still a lot of people out there who are buying these games for 60 quid or 50 quid or whatever, even though you can have them in Game Pass. So online, I'm seeing a lot of positivity where they're like, oh, Microsoft have been so consumer friendly. You know, I don't need to drop £50 on Halo to play the multiplayer. Like, that's fantastic. I'm really excited to play it. Whereas I'm sat here thinking, I'm a Game Pass sub, so I was already getting Halo's multiplayer for free. You know, like, it's built into my Game Pass subscription that I'm going to get Halo Infinite with its multiplayer. So this has now made my Halo experience a lesser experience, because you've gone from me getting it for free anyway, but, you know, I'm not expecting in that world that it's going to be so heavily monetized. Whereas now that it's a full-on free-to-play, anyone can play it for free game, they are going to monetize the hell out of this game. It's going to be, you know, filled with battle passes and cosmetic things you can buy. And it just is. Like, they haven't been leaning too heavily into that idea right now, but there's no way they're giving out Halo's multiplayer for free to everyone and they're not going to monetize with that kind of stuff. And it's just really frustrating, because I've played quite a lot of Halo games online in the past, and, like, they used to be a really fun and, you know, common thing in the Halo games and other games where, you know, you could unlock different costumes for your multiplayer characters, or in Halo, it's like different Spartan helmets by doing built-in tasks in the game. So it'd be like, you know, finishing the campaign on Legendary would give you a special helmet, and then you could put that on in multiplayer so everyone could see that you'd beaten the campaign. Or, you know, maybe you need to get like 10,000 kills or 1,000 kills in multiplayer and you'd get a special one. And, you know, it was just a cool sign of like, oh, you know, you can see that guy's, you know, been playing some serious Halo. He's got these cool things. Whereas a battle pass, for people who don't know what a battle pass is, it's basically, rather than just paying for cosmetic items, you're paying to unlock challenges which will give you the cosmetics. So typically, if you buy a battle pass and then forget to play the game, you've spent your money on literally nothing. You won't get any cosmetics because you didn't do the challenges in time. So this is just you paying for the privilege of having challenges like those ones I just talked about that were in old Halo games. That's all this is. You're going to have to now pay for the ability to win X amount of games to get a helmet or whatever. And again, you know, this is kind of just speculation at this point. There's not been a nailed on confirmation that this is going to be a battle pass situation, but I would be 99% sure it will be. And I'm incredibly not happy about it.
Yeah, it all seems to be building into the big notion that Xbox Live Gold is disappearing away, and that maybe multiplayer will be going free to play on Xbox consoles, but at what cost? is the big question. I don't really play multiplayer or Halo, so this might kind of give us all a trip. But, you know, this certainly does feel like we're going towards that way. And time will tell if that harms or helps the experience. It'll probably harm it. But
yeah, I would think so. And, you know, this all kind of like flies in the face of, you know, we had some conversations about a month back on the show about the rising cost of next-gen games. And we were saying, you know, in a perfect world, like all of these companies trying to add an extra sort of £10 or £15 onto their game's price tag at launch will alleviate some of the need for shady kind of multiplayer monetary practices. And, well, here we are. Here's this. So
we all know they're not going to do that.
Yeah, we knew it was naive anyway. But here we go. You know, here's a nice nailed on confirmation that that's not where we're going. We're gonna keep putting the squeeze on multiplayer players, I think, which, yeah, it's a shame.
Of course, a lot of people last week will have watched the Xbox Series X showcase and for some unbeknownst reason have had the question, but where is Battletoads? Hey guys, did you see any Battletoads? When am I going to get them toads? Well, good news for those sick freaks, because it turns out that Battletoads is coming, and it's coming much sooner than we thought. It's going to be out on August the 20th. Included, of course, with Xbox Game Pass. So are you excited to get your toad on?
I mean, you know, this sure is a series of games that some people seem to have some kind of liking for. I don't really know why. You know, it's, yeah. I mean, look, Battletoads has been gone for probably 2 decades now, if not longer.
There's a reason for that.
There kind of is, yeah, you know. I mean, so Battletoads, for anyone who doesn't know, this is kind of like it's got elements of Streets of Rage style side-scrolling brawler type game to it. But then it's also got like vehicle sections where you have to like avoid obstacles. The old games were famed for being insultingly difficult in those areas. So we do need to finish those games at some point because they're in Rare Replay, which is in Game Pass, which terrifies me. But you know, we haven't finished them yet. We've just spent some time on them. And I don't know. If there's some Battletoads fans out there, then good for you guys. You're going to get another Battletoads game. Bad for us because we're going to have to probably play this in a few weeks to let people know what it's like. But
you just know it's going to be obnoxiously difficult, and it's going to have one of those crap racing sequences.
Which that's for sure.
People always go, "Oh God, do you remember when games were hard?" It's like it wasn't hard; it was just obnoxious. Yeah. There's a difference. I just play Streets of Rage 4.
That was a great game. Definitely play that one.
I don't want to play this.
Yeah. I'd actually be more looking forward to this if it was made by those developers, to be honest, because I trust them to bring back these franchises in the right way. But nonetheless, you know, it's a first-party game. It's something to have a look at. It's in Game Pass, so you won't have to pay for it. The biggest revelation I had from hearing about the Battletoads coming back is I didn't realize how god-awful the names of the Battletoads were until I... until I noticed the announcements for this. Do you offhand know the name of the Battletoads?
No, I can't remember them. No.
All right, Josh. So the Battletoads names are, let me just dig those out because they are real classics. Here we go. The Battletoads names, Josh, are Zit, Rash, and Pimple.
I mean, that's the 90s.
That sure is 90s.
And late 80s right there. Yeah. It pretty much summed up in a couple of names, isn't it, really?
Yep.
So I don't know. I guess the only good news is that this isn't being developed by Rare, and so it has a half chance of being good. Because as I mentioned to last week, Rare haven't made a good game in 15 years, everybody.
Rare made good games. Sea of Thieves is a weird game, but it's good. And you know, they got stuck in Kinect prison for like a decade because Microsoft relied on Rare to be the only people making good Kinect games. So they had to make stuff like Kinect Sports, which apparently was actually good, but I never played it.
Stop lying.
They
made Viva Pinata. I like Viva Pinata. Yeah, I think that Pinata's came out 15 great. Years ago.
It was in
2005, it sounds about right.
Something like that, yeah. So that's fair, but you know. Yeah, this is off at some other kind of retro studio. I don't know the name off the top of my head, sadly. But, you know, look, yeah, it's a game you can give a go to on Game Pass. And it frees Rare up to, you know, spend another 5 years on Everwild and not tell us what it is. So that's
nice, I'll
tell you
what it is. It'll be flat. Nonetheless.
Well, on that delightful, positive note, that is all of the news we have this week. So... yeah, until next time, if you want to catch us on social media, we are at Beat the Sheet on Twitter, and we're also at Beat the Sheet on Facebook. And if you want to drop us an email or some feedback or maybe a question, you can find us at beatthesheetpodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, I'm Andy Wood, and I'm still stuck at the 55% mark for my completion of the sheet at the moment.
And I am Josh Stimson, and I've increased my share to 47%.
Nice.
Of the games on Game Pass, which is pretty good, isn't it?
I think this is the closest we've been on this sheet for a while. Because, you know, obviously when we started this challenge, I'd played a lot more Xbox 360 garbage than you. So I had a bit of a head start. But yeah, dropping it to 8% is a good achievement. So yeah, good
effort. We're getting there. We're climbing.
We sure are. Right then, yeah. We will catch you all next week then.
Yeah. Goodbye. Rare still sucks.